This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, it's time for Bar None, the sports show that hopes to get you all hyped up and ready to do something active. I'm Angeline Tay, and our power in the house this week is one of motorcycle racing's all-time legends, Mick Doohan.
I was finally able to win a championship, and then I had another crash in 99. I mustn't have been very good at crashing.
Next, get on the ball with Audrey Roach and Charlie Tingji, director of Eurasia, as they tee up the upcoming golf tournament.
I really hope the Malaysian fans get behind Team Asia. They're two teams of 10, and we're hoping that there's an 11th player for the Asian team, which will be the crowd.
And finally, instead of running laps on your treadmill, try making the urban landscape your personal obstacle course. We join a session with the Parkour Academy of Malaysia, led by Ludovic Ville at Taman Tasik Perdana, KL, just because we can.
I mean, we have tried climbing the walls here and jumping off from the other building up there, so it's really fun.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to Bar None with me, Audrey Raj. Our power in the house this week is a five-time world motorcycle racing champ who is known for his never-say-die attitude. This Australian almost lost his right leg in a crash in the early 90s, but persevered to take five consecutive MotoGP championships between the years 1994 and 1998, and is now hailed a legend of the golden age of Grand Prix road racing. Our power in the house this week is the Wakanda from Down Under, Mick Doohan.
You see them at the beginning of each Grand Prix, waiting and hoping. The world's best road racers gathered on the grid with just one objective, to beat Michael Doohan.
Mick was down a few weeks ago to announce the nominees for this year's Laureus Wool Sports Awards. We had a quick chat with him just to pick his brain and see what makes this wool champion tick. Mick, welcome to the show. Tell us about yourself. How did regular old Michael Sydney Doohan become Mick Doohan MotoGP star?
Well, just with a lot of passion for motorcycle racing and a desire to want to win, I guess. But not giving up and just having a lot of fun along the way.
Rumor has it you inherited a 50cc mini bike at the age of 8. You must have really cool parents.
Yes, I was very lucky, you know. I think I was luckier to have two older brothers who I could swing off their coattails and get the bikes from them. So then I started racing around about 8 years old.
8 years old?
Yeah.
Right, but you made your first Grand Prix debut for Honda on a 500cc bike in 1989.
Correct.
And you were very close to winning your first motorcycle racing season in 92, before that crash at the first practice session of the Dutch TT. Now, there was talk about possible amputation of your right leg due to complications from the injuries. That few weeks must have been a huge roller coaster ride.
Yeah, look, you know, it's never good when somebody informs you that perhaps you may lose a leg. Yeah, but, you know, that's just part and parcel of sport. You know, it's part and parcel of life. I think everything is a bit of a journey. And, you know, it was a difficult period of my life, but it certainly pushed me to probably get stronger mentally and want to break through from having... I guess a little bit of a disability in one way to actually overcome that and get back to my winning ways. Because I'd been, in fact, I was very close in 91 to winning the championship, and then 92 again, and then with the injury. So it took 93 to recover, and then 94 I was finally able to win a championship, and then I had another crash in 99. I mustn't have been very good at crashing.
On the long straights, these motorcycles appear to be very evenly matched.
Well, they do, and so do all the riders. Otherwise, we really wouldn't have four guys this close at the end of a 500 race. I mean, this is something that's...
Kevin!
The back went, but he managed to hold that. But it may make a difference. He managed to block Doohan down the straight, but Doohan's going to go for the inside line. Let's have a look at the power, but the Suzuki looks every bit as fast. And Doohan goes down the inside. Doohan sneaks it in that melee. Schwantz is still second. Rainey is third. And we're on the last lap now.
But injuries from that 92 crash, they were clearly serious enough for you to think about giving up racing? Why continue?
Because I enjoyed it so much. I enjoyed racing. You know, I was relatively young and I guess a little crazy, you know. But the main reason was I just enjoyed winning. I felt that I could, if I could get myself back to fitness and get strong enough, that perhaps I could win the championship. And so, again, just followed my dreams and I was able to succeed.
So you clearly did that in 1994. Tell us about the now famous thumb-operated rear bike.
Yeah, the thumb brake. You know, well, again, I lost the use of my right ankle with that accident. So from my right knee down, essentially, my leg is there, but it doesn't really work. And so I couldn't use a rear brake, which is on the right foot, and so I needed a rear brake, and we just put it on the rear thumb, like on the left hand side of the handlebar, but operated by the thumb. And you know, some people today even still use that in some areas of racing, you know.
Wow. Now, you went on to win 5 consecutive world championships. Now, there was a noticeable pattern during your races, taking a huge lead and then cruising to victory. What was the secret to that?
I think just there wasn't really any secret, but you know, just being strong week in, week out, and mentally demoralizing the other guys, and so you know, and by doing that, just made them feel that you know, it was basically impossible to sort of get the better of me. And so if I could, you know, it wasn't always a case where I'd get a big lead and then cruise. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was about winning whichever way. I kept having to mix it up, but quite often I could win with quite a comfortable margin.
In 1999, Doohan had another accident, this time in a very wet qualifying session for the Spanish Grand Prix. He again broke his leg, and that in several places, and subsequently announced his retirement. He went on to work as a roving advisor to Honda's Grand Prix race effort, but at the conclusion of the 2004 season, parted company with the team. After his success in MotoGP, Doohan got a chance to test a Formula One race car, the Williams FW19, at Circuit de Catalunya in 1998. Fans were hopeful for a switch to F1, but Doohan found the car difficult to drive and crashed against a guardrail.
Well, what can I say about Mick Doohan? He was the king of motor racing in the 90s. He was the dominator of the 500cc circuit back then. When he races and takes the lead, his goodbye mates to the rest. No BRG, Rainey, or even Gardner could match him in his Repsol Honda bike. But 90s was Doohan's year era.
Mick Doohan was my favorite racer back in the 90s because he gave his best for each and every race. Was willing to put his body on the line, push to the limit, and he was always hungry for success. And even though he had some major injuries, he just kept on coming back and he never gave up. And he eventually won 5 world titles, which is amazing. And that just goes to show how physically and mentally tough he was. Even though he was supremely competitive, every time he pinned the throttle off the track, I remember him to be a nice guy and a great sportsman. And that's what I respect about him the most.
That, however, was not the end of Doohan's love affair with horsepower and speed. He turned his sights to aviation by gaining his helicopter pilot's license and also became the face of road safety campaigns in his home country, Australia. Today, he is an active member of the Laureus World Sports Academy and its Sports for Good Foundation, which reaches out to young people hampered by challenging social issues like poverty, homelessness, war, violence, drug abuse, discrimination, and AIDS. Now, tell us a bit about your work with the Laureus World Sports Academy.
Well, you know, I've been around the Laureus since the inception, but I've only been an Academy member for a few years, and so I haven't actually visited that many, had that many project visits, but, you know, I enjoy immensely being part of what makes the Laureus Foundation the Laureus Foundation, and the inspiration that and support that the Laureus provides to all the projects around the world, and I've lost count how many there are now, but there's well in excess of 150 now.
What can we expect next? My final question from Mick Doohan in the future.
What can you expect from me?
Yes.
Probably getting slower as I get older. You know.
Mick, thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome.
So we're on board with Carlos Checa, looking back at Mick Doohan on his big number one machine. It's looming closer, and far too close for Carlos Checa, because he comes up into the lead. Doohan now from Checa, from Nobuatsu Aoki. 1, 2, and 3. Up the hill, there's Cito Pons.
137 race starts, 58 poles, 95 podiums, 54 wins, and 5 world championships. I've been speaking to the king of speed, Mick Doohan, 5-time MotoGP world champ and ambassador of the Laureus World Sports Academy, as our power in the house this week. I'm Audrey Raj for BFM 89.9.
Coming up, get on a ball with Audrey Raj and Charlie Tingy, director of Eurasia. This is Bar None on BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, this is Bar None and I'm Audrey Raj. We're on to the second part of our show, On the Ball, where we cover news, issues and everything in between on sports. Coming to Kuala Lumpur next week is the Eurasia Cup, a Ryder Cup-style tournament that pits Team Asia against Team Europe. The tournament will kick off on Thursday, March 27th at the Glenmarie Golf and Country Club, with some big names like Tongtai Jaiji and Miguel Angel Jimenez. But what sets the Eurasia Cup apart from all the other golf tourneys in Kuala Lumpur, and how exciting is this Ryder Cup format going to be for spectators? Well, to answer these questions, we have Charlie Tingy with us today, Eurasia Cup director. Charlie, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So, let's get straight to it. Why should we be looking forward to the Eurasia Cup?
I think the Eurasia Cup is going to be a dynamic event. As you said, it's a Ryder Cup style. You know, what is the Ryder Cup? Ryder Cup is Europe versus America. The Eurasia Cup is Europe versus Asia. It's a team match play event. It's players playing for the team, not necessarily for themselves. So it is different from your conventional stroke play tournament, where obviously players invariably spend most of their careers playing against their fellow competitors and playing against a golf course. Here, obviously, they're playing against the golf course, but they're playing for the sort of greater good of the team. So it's a very different dynamic. And what you see in a sport like golf is it creates so many iconic moments. And I think, you know, the Eurasia Cup will bring some special moments next week for hopefully European and Asian golfers.
Tell us a bit more about the format of play. What is scoring going to be like, and what can we expect as spectators?
Okay, the tournament is from Thursday to Saturday. There are three sort of variables on the match play format. You've got foursomes, which is basically alternate shot. So it's an interesting thing where you've got two European players or two Asian players playing one ball. And that creates its own synergy, because some players may prefer to use a particular manufacturer, where another player may decide to use, you know, a different ball. So there has that sort of intricacy and difficulty about making sure you pair players together that are compatible in that sort of area. Then you've got four ball, which by virtue of what it says is that players play their own balls. And then you've got the straight singles match play, which is one-on-one. So each hole is worth, probably best way to go, each hole is worth a point, and at the end of the match you have a winner, a loser or a draw. At the end of that will then count towards the team score. So as I said, it's all about the team.
All right, so speaking of the teams, any big names other than Tongchai and Miguel so far?
Yeah, I think the Eurasia Cup, you know, separates itself, you know, apart, because it's, you have to qualify. This is an invitation event, so players have come from the world rankings, they've come from the last year's order of merit, and then there's obviously two wild cards. So I mean, looking down the Asian team, obviously Tongchai is the playing captain. We've got Abi Barnrat, that the Malaysian fans will know well. I mean, he obviously won the Malaysian Open, he did very well at the CIMB Classic. We've got the top four from the Asian Tour of Merit, which adds, you know, with Sudhakar, Lahari and Buller, two Indians in there. So what's nice about the Asian team is it's young, it's dynamic, there's a lot of depth to it, and I think that's going to be really refreshing for them. On the European side of things, as you said, you know, Miguel Angel Jimenez, a huge character, a great stalwart of European golf. He brings a certain amount of panaz with him. And then, you know, the star names, you know, Graham McDowell, it would be great to sort of welcome him to Malaysia. You know, probably the key name in golf at the moment is Victor Dubuisson, the Frenchman that did so well over in the States a couple of weeks ago. You know, and supported by some, you know, classics with, you know, Gallagher, Thomas Bjorn, Both teams have matched up really nicely, and I think that's the benefit of going off a bona fide qualification system, is we're inviting form players. They're the form players at this moment in time, which will mean, you know, it should be a sort of evenly matched affair.
Those are really, really big names, so we know what to expect from the players. But what is Eurasia Cup expecting from spectators? What do you think about the exposure of golf in Malaysia? Are you expecting a good turnout?
Yeah, I think, you know, the Malaysian public on the whole understand golf. I mean, there is corporate Malaysia who is a massive supporter of golf, with the Malaysian Open, you know, the CMB Classic, the LPGA event, you know, also, you know, staying in the Klang Valley, you've got the Selangor Masters. So there's plenty of golf. I mean, we think we're a little bit different, obviously, as we've explained earlier, by virtue of the format. But I think that people can come along and enjoy what is a relatively, you know, intense form of entertainment. You know, we're starting at 8:30 in the morning, we'll be finished by 3 o'clock. So we're looking to put on a range of activities for the individuals, for the families, ranging from having some live music, having some trick shots, hopefully showing the F1 qualifying on the big screen, you know, getting people to stay on and sort of have that sort of fun-packed day. So it is a full day's entertainment.
All right. And this is happening this Thursday, March 27th until the 29th. And it's going to be a big party at Glenmarie?
Well, we hope so. I mean, yeah, we think it'll be great fun. We think the players are going to come here in, you know, a very open frame of mind. You know, they're obviously here to compete. There's $4 million prize purse on the table for the players. So it's, you know, it's a pretty serious week for them. But I think they will be embraced by Malaysia as everyone is when they come here, and I think they'll respond to that. You know, what I would say is, you know, from a neutral perspective, we really hope the Malaysian fans get behind Team Asia. You know, they're two teams of 10, and we're hoping that there's an 11th player for the Asian team, which will be the crowd. As I said, you know, there's phenomenal diversity in the players. There's players from 13 different countries coming. You know, Asia's very well represented, from Malaysia with Nicholas Fung, you know, Thailand, India, Bangladesh, Korea, Japan. So I really hope that, you know, the Malaysians come out in force and support Asia, and make sure that, you know, Europe have a rough ride and go away understanding about how passionate the fans here are.
All right. Charlie, I'm looking forward to it already. Thank you so much for your time. I've been speaking with Charlie Tingey, Eurasia Cup Director. Next up, we've got Because We Can with Angeline Tay. This is Audrey Raj for BFM 89.9. Listening to Bar None with me, Angeline Tay. We're in our final segment, Because We Can, where we talk about sports or activities that you can get into to help shape a fitter you. This week, push-ups, cat leap, jumping, rolling and hopping. We join a parkour session with the Parkour Academy of Malaysia.
Hi, I'm Atsush, and I'm from Japan. I've just landed here in Malaysia this morning, and I have no idea how this activity is end.
BFM 89.9, you're at the last segment of Bar None, Because We Can, and sitting next to me is Ludovic Ville. He is the trainer and also a free runner. How do I call you?
Tresseur.
We are here at the Panggung anniversary, Taman Tasik Perdana, and it's a Saturday afternoon. There's a training session here, and tell me what generally happens on Saturday 2 p.m.
So Saturday we gather, then I give a class to my students, parkour class.
The first hours every Saturdays would be physical conditioning. So it'd be hopping, push-ups, pull-ups. The next hour would be the real tracer, free running, jumping.
And then we work on basic techniques, parkour techniques. And then we just walk in the park and try to find some fun stuff to do, like jumps, like climbing, like... I'll show you later. Ab stance, body all straight when you push, and you have to throw your arms very harsh, because it's going to help you make your body much lighter. Okay? I'll push you, you guys.
What are they going to do now?
So just now they did a precision on the floor, yeah, on the ground. Now they are going to repeat the same jump, but with maybe 2 feet high, 1 or 2 feet high, okay, which is... You'll see much more different for them. Go. Come on this thing here. Here.
Is this dangerous though?
It can be. If you don't know how to train, it can be dangerous, yeah. But it's like any other sports, actually. Even basketball can be dangerous if you don't know how to train, how to catch a ball, right?
Oh my god, it looks so tough. It looks really hard. You have to like build up your upper body strength.
Everybody's done?
Yeah.
Okay, rest.
How are you involved with this Parkour Academy of Malaysia?
Well, since I first met him, we got married, then we opened the company together.
Besides doing this training session every Saturday, where else do you do trainings?
We would do in international schools, like Desa Park City, Garden International and International School of Kuala Lumpur.
How popular is this now?
It's going very, 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 very popular in school, but not really for publics.
And every Saturday is open to public. And how much is the fees to join this class?
The fees is 80 ringgit per month, which is 20 ringgit per session. Yeah, and we have like 4 sessions a month.
How many people are actively involved in the public training session?
5, to be exact. Yeah.
It's like, you know, Formula One. They always do like few laps before starting, just to warm the tires, right? You do the same with your feet. You warm your feet here. Okay? And then it's going to be like, you know, very...
Grip,
yeah. Sorry.
Okay, let's go. Here.
Here you jump, you push, here.
Oh. I mean, we have tried climbing the walls here and jumping off from the other building up there, so it's really fun.
And just now I've been watching you hopping down the stairs.
Yep.
And why do you do that?
This is part of physical conditioning, so to probably train up the muscles. Yep, the leg ones. And this is called precision, part of parkour, one of the techniques. So he's making us train better.
So we're going in a place in Lake Garden. Don't ask me the name, I have no idea. It's just like a place with water and rocks. And we are going to do precision there. If you're not precise, you're unbalanced, ploof. Okay, so I didn't tell them yet, but everybody I brought there fell.
Do you think you're gonna fall?
Yes.
Are you prepared to fall?
I guess so.
Are you scared?
I guess it's too late for that now.
Do you have a lot of girls joining this?
Okay, so for the Saturday session, no. But for the schools, I got a lot actually. Let's say on 100 students, maybe we have maybe 40 girls. The difference between the Saturday session and the school session is the physical conditioning part. Because for 1 hour session with kids, I cannot ask them to do conditioning like we are doing right now. So it's more based like on fun, jumping and just enjoying like entertainment. But the statistician is like really conditioning and techniques to be able to do parkour outside.
How does this benefit people when they join this parkour?
Well, it benefits them in a way that they get like confidence in themselves. They won't be shy. They open up more. Like especially in schools, we are very, very shy students. But as they join, they become more confident to talk to other students and also with themselves, and they know how to control their body.
What do you think of the 4 first-timers here?
They are very good. You can ask Satish also. I think they are very good for the first time.
Yeah. They do not look like first-timers.
Yeah, they really...
How does it feel after you're jumping on the rocks above the water?
That's all. I did a lot of rocks and I use a lot of muscles and I'm tired, but I feel good.
How about Harith? I think you and Hanif were the only one who jumped on the rocks. How does it feel that you've achieved it, becoming a hero?
Yeah, wet. It's interesting. New experience.
And yourself? You're coming back next week?
Yep. I'll be here all year long.
Until the end of time?
Yep.
Nora, you just did some conditioning, a little bit of precision on the stairs, and you completely skipped the waterfall. How do you feel now?
It's actually very interesting. Something new I've never seen before. And it's like new exercises that you don't normally do if you go like other programs. So it's interesting, it's new. I would recommend it to other people. I'm gonna go on Facebook and check it out for myself. And
not the next day, the day after and the day again after, you remember me. Because it's very pain. Like when you wake up, you cannot, you know, push your hand. So you have to roll, you know, to go out from your bed. And then that time you remember me. And then you're like, ah, Ludo. I'm very happy.
And that's all for Bar None this week. If you are passionate about a sport or activity and want to share that excitement with us, email us at barnone@bfm.my. You can also follow us on Facebook by liking our page, facebook.com/bfmbarnone. Thank you for listening, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.